All right, so we got a couple of ball games in the NBA tonight, a couple of closeout games. The Suns on the road can close it out in Dallas, and Miami can close it out in Philly. And here is a longtime ESPN NBA play-by-play voice back on Overdrive. Here is Mark Kestacher. How you doing, Mark?
Gentlemen, good to be back on with you. How you guys doing?
We're doing very well. We're excited. We're excited for the games tonight. But before we get to those, let's look back on the scene last night where the Warriors got destroyed by Memphis, like losing by 50. Yeah. They were getting absolutely demolished. And Draymond Green is dancing as if they're about to win the championship. And he addressed it after the game and basically said, listen, win or lose, you got to ham it up. Like, basically, if the road team hates on you, you got to make sure that you don't allow them to see that you are taking it on the chin.
Still a goofy look.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, Mark. Like, is it more acceptable or reasonable to come from Draymond because he's already got three rings? Like, if that was a team that had a history of choking in the playoffs, do you think the Warriors could get away with that last night?
No, I think no, you're right. And if it's a young team like Memphis, you're like, all right, maybe they're just too young and they just don't get it. It's that whole night was surprising. I mean, I was on another talk show earlier today, and I must have said, you know, trailed by 55 like three or four times. And I'm like, what? What are we talking about? I mean, how does this happen when you're on the road, you have a chance to clinch, they don't have their best player? I mean, the whole thing was stunning. It was weird, you know, and everything you just talked about, you know, guys being a little jovial. And it, maybe it was just so absurd that everything was thrown out. The coach isn't there anyway. You know, Steve Kerr is back in San Francisco trying to feel better. You know, I can't make heads or tails of it. I work with PJ Carlissimo, and I know I've asked him in the past as a fan, and I never played at that level. I'm like, I would much rather lose by 55 than lose by one. Like, it always feels like those 1 point losses, you're up tossing and turning all night, and 55, you turn the page. And he's like, nope, not at all. I mean, I'd rather lose by one because we could fix that. I can't fix 55, you know, in many cases if he didn't have a great team. It's probably not emblematic of the series, and you're right, probably in the end having three rings and still being in a great position going home up 3-2. But that was just bizarre. The whole night was bizarre after the Boston-Milwaukee finish till the end of that game in Memphis.
Yeah, it really was. And as for Milwaukee, I mean, there's Giannis again going off for 40-plus, and Jokic wins back-to-back MVPs, and Embiid was in the running, clearly. And Giannis was as well. But what he has done the last couple of years in the playoffs, has it defined him as the best player in the NBA, in your opinion? Is Giannis the best guy going right now?
I think so. I mean, I felt like Kevin Durant took the torch from LeBron James, and Giannis was right there. And obviously KD got hurt and was out for a while, and then, you know, miraculously came back and was playing well. And, you know, this year, you know, for KD and the way Giannis finished last year coming back from injury and having a, you know, unreal finals to finish off Phoenix, it felt like he had taken that next step and he was right there. And you could argue it. I would have no problem with that argument to say, you know, that he's the best player, best basketball player on earth right now. And, you know, there's still some deficiencies in his game that if he ever figured out would make him, you know, a robot, basically. He wouldn't be able to beat him. But, I mean, just not only his skill level and, you know, the fact that, you know, he takes two steps from half court and he could finger roll it through. Just the fact that he's all business all the time. Like, he doesn't have that attitude of, you know, I've been there, I've won my championship, I've got two MVPs. Like, he always seems like he still wants to prove himself. And, you know, you guys know that's hard in the pro ranks. Everyone changes eventually, and he hasn't yet. And that's what, you know, from the outside looking in, you love about him. But I would not have any argument if you want to say he's the best player in the league and the best basketball player on the planet.
Mark, I've been telling these two that I work with every day all year that Ja Morant is one of my guys. I love the guy. I think he's a phenomenal player. He's got all the things you want in a superstar player. How do you think it plays out? Because traditionally I find in the NBA or a lot of the sports leagues now, the guy in the small market, it's sooner or later they say, you know what, check please, I want to be a Nick, I want to be a Laker. Do you think he stays there and he turns it around and or tries to turn the organization around and be a consistent winner there? Or does he one day just wake up and say, I'm out of here, I want to go to a big market?
It seems that, you know, 4/5, 8/9, whatever percentage you want to put on it, most of the guys eventually you know, get swayed. The NBA's, and the way the salary structure is, you could stay for more at home. So it's not always, you know, Madison Avenue or, you know, Los Angeles, Chicago even, you know, are going to get the most money to get you there. But sometimes you're right. You're the big fish in the small pond, and, you know, you might want to get together with two or three of your buds and in a classic NBA market to do it. And we just spoke about Giannis, and he didn't. Like, he has signed up for the five-year max in Milwaukee, and that's so rare. I always hope, I root for those guys to stay with their teams because it just makes the league better. I mean, there's, you know, a few instances where, you know, teams get together, big market in this kind of big three era and have won it. But, you know, this, as a national announcer for these games here in the U.S., it's always amazing how many markets I don't visit because we're always going to the same, like, you know, 8 or 10 cities, and the other 20 are left behind. And Memphis is one of those where now, you know, they've had a few moments where they've been in the spotlight, and it takes them 3, 4, 5 years to get together. And he was in the draft with Zion, and so they had no choice on who they were going to take at number two. It was whoever New Orleans didn't take. And much like Seattle, who got Kevin Durant because Portland went with Greg Oden, Memphis got Ja Morant. So right. You take that, you know, kind of gift, and you run with it, and you hope for the best. And they seem to have a really good management structure out there. You know, the owner's going to spend. The GM just won Executive of the Year. As you could see, would they go like 20-5 without Morant in the regular year? And then they just won by, you know, 1 million points last night. So I hope he stays. I don't know him well enough to know the real answer to that question, you know, if he stays long term, but I certainly hope so.
With Mark Kestacher of ESPN, this Phil Jackson role that he's going to play in L.A., is not overly surprising considering his history with the team and the Buss family. But Bill Plaschke, who's a reporter out in L.A. and as connected as they get, he was saying something somewhat off the cuff today that he's heard Phil might want to trade LeBron. Now, I don't think he's got the power to do that. But where do you see LeBron's future going here, Mark? Like, does he hold all of the cards, or is there a chance L.A. at some point turns on him?
You know, I'd say he holds all of the cards because he's always held the cards. And, you know, he seems happy out there. That's where he wanted to be. You know, all the off the basketball, off the court stuff, you know, was very appealing to him as well to be out there. I don't know, you know, what the power structure is, or if he gets to a point where he's like, you know what, I'm out of here. And he signs those short enough contracts where, you know, he eventually will be in that position to make that move. But he's got to feel a little bit cornered, right? I mean, the roster construction, the lack of, you know, salary space to get guys, or even those who are in charge of the organization, from, you know, Phil Jackson from the outside to the Buss family, to Kurt Rambis's wife, apparently, and, you know, even Rob Pelinka as the general manager. You know, there's been a lot of questionable decisions made in the last couple of years, and that alone may be, you know, I don't want to say waste the rest of his prime, because I don't know how you could be in your prime at 37, but he still kind of is. So I don't know. I just get the sense. And I think I said it a few years ago when he was leaving Cleveland, I was like, that might be the end of the title chasing for LeBron, and it's more of where do I want to play. Now, I was wrong because they won in the bubble a couple of years ago in 2020, but, you know, now you're in a position where you're in your upper 30s. You know, at some point, you know, where does he want to go? Does he want to go back to Cleveland? There's talk, you know, he wants to play a season with his son. I don't watch enough high school basketball to know if his son's even an NBA prospect. So it's very murky at this point, and it's unfortunate because that's a flagship franchise. I mean, look, the New York Knicks haven't been relevant in a long time either. So, you know, these are big flagship areas that you'd like to see, you know, get back, you know, more deep into the playoffs, and I have no idea. I mean, hearing that from you guys and from Plaschke, you're right. He is as dialed in as it gets. That just adds to the bizarreness of even just the last year in Los Angeles.
How do you circle back on Phil Jackson? I mean, I understand his track record. It's hard not to understand that and know that with the championships, his relationships in Los Angeles with the Lakers and the Buss family. But 2 years ago, this guy was sleeping in the stands at a scouting combine. I'm not talking about, like, He was sleeping, literally sleeping. There was a video of him taking a cat nap at a scouting combine, and all of a sudden he's now got to be the mastermind again.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks for itself, doesn't it? I think there, you know, there comes a point where, you know, if you don't turn it over to, you know, basketball operation people, and maybe they need another fresh look, I don't know, and you go back, you know, to ownership that's been for decades, and this is second generation ownership, maybe, you know, maybe they need to turn over power to someone else. It's hard to do, right, when you've driven the ship and your late father was so successful at doing that, and you put your trust in certain people, and then you just wonder if, you know, those people just don't have it anymore, or if they do, you know, it's a question mark if they're going to make the right call. I have no idea who's going to take over as, you know, head coach of that team. You know, Frank Vogel was their, I don't know, eighth choice, and, you know, he did win a championship and he's an outstanding coach. But, you know, who wants to take the reins of what appears to be a big mess out there and try to clean it up? Like, there's so much not going in the right direction out there, whether it's the people making the decisions or whoever, you know, eventually gets that job to try to turn it around. I don't know how they do it in enough time under whatever contract LeBron James has left.
With Mark Kesticher of ESPN, so you're calling a game tonight. Philly is on the ropes at home against Miami. Kyle Lowry will not play again tonight. Obviously, a lot of connections up here in Toronto to this series. How do you see this playing out for Philly to find a way to get a win and push it to seven? What has to happen for Philly to do that?
Man, Embiid has to look like Embiid, and he hasn't since he's come back. I mean, he being in the lineup is probably the only reason that they're still in this series. They have to get whatever James Harden did in the fourth quarter two games ago, Sunday night here. They got to get something like that. And then there's, you know, other guys that obviously you guys just saw them in the first round, but Tyrese Maxey has been a really good second-year player, hasn't had a great series so far. Matisse Thybulle is a great defender, but they still need him to get a little offense if they can, and you know, and something more out of Tobias Harris. They need the others. They need the trend of home teams, you know, having the shooters to continue here. We asked Doc Rivers this morning if he believes in role players play better at home, and he said, not necessarily, but I do kind of believe in that tonight, or at least I hope tonight, that works for them so they can get back to Miami. And, you know, and they need the Heat to play like they played in games 3 and 4 here, which is they couldn't shoot the ball. You know, they have you mentioned Kyle's out, and they have a starting backcourt of Gabe Vincent and Max Strus. And if you don't follow the NBA, you're like, who? I'm the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
But those two guys played well in Miami, did not play well here in Philadelphia. And if those trends set up, maybe it is a home series and they get it back to South Florida on Sunday.
How many times have you eaten out with PJ Carlissimo?
Well, if I had a scale in the bathroom here, it would tell me that every night for the last 2 weeks, and it is, yeah, it's something else. I'm sure he's got 11 p.m. reservation. I just can't say no. I mean, it's so much fun to talk with him, and the meals are always outstanding. But yes, I don't know if I could survive this. We're not even halfway through the postseason.
No, you got
yet.
A long way to go, man. That's a lot of reservations.
A long way to go.
Yeah, you say hi to PJ for us. We love him, man. And
I will.
It'll be a
great
fun
guy.
One tonight. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Mark.
Hope so. Was hoping to get up to Toronto, hopefully next season.
Yep.
One of my favorite cities in the world.
We're feeling good about it next year. We'll see you up here next year, and we'll chat well before then. Thank you.
Good talking with you guys.
There's Mark Kesticher of ESPN riding shotgun with PJ Carlissimo, who goes out for dinner every single night. Literally every single night.
I respect that. I think it's actually it's a crazy, not stat. Like, I would love to see his analytics. What, dinners per 60? Oh, would you call it that? Like,
yeah. Like, why wouldn't he, though? Why do dishes and cook a bunch of garbage and leftovers?
He's from Seattle, so he's on the road. He's in Philly. He's not, what is he going to cook dinner in his hotel room? Like, clearly he's going out, but, you know.
But, like, you're home for Christmas. It's like, yeah, let's go out for dinner.
That one shocked me. Like, I remember grilling him years ago. I said, so wait a minute, let me clarify this. 365 days, like Christmas night? He's like, yeah, we're going out. Like, every single
day. You just wonder if it's the full routine, because when you're traveling that much, sometimes you just got to sit down and say, fire me up this meal and bring it to me quick because I want to get back to my room. You wonder if he goes for the whole experience. It's a big right. night. Appies.
Appies. Yeah. Testing out wine. Like everything. Desserts. Like if it's a
because that becomes a full-time job.
Yeah, that's a lifestyle. That's a lifestyle. And yeah, we appreciate it. We definitely appreciate that with PJ Carlissimo and Mark Astucher. The 11 p.m. Rezzo. You know, remember the Harry Carey stuff? We should dig that back up when Harry Carey's diary was found, like after he had passed away, and all it said every day was going to the bar. Like he went to the bar every single day, except for like 11 days of the year. It was like 354 days a year he was at the bar.
I love it.
No details, just at bar. Like that was his
day. Documented. Like it's almost like he woke up and forgot. Oh, I forgot to fill in my diary at bar.
Yeah. Like how many days in a row was it?
288 consecutive days of bar hopping.
Wow, that's amazing. 288 days in a row,
and that's getting slaughtered too.
Absolutely. Wow. And then calling games, day games too. When he was with the Cubs, they exclusively played day games. How many times did he wake up in a garbage dumpster somewhere?
And this bud's for you.
And then go and call a game without his shirt on.
That's the thing. There's that famous picture of him in the stands. He's got no tarp on.
Yeah, and he's so happy they won. Like he's going nuts. He's got no tarp on. You know he's so hungover, and he's got plans for after the game.
And I think he smoked, right? Was he smoking? He had a cigar, a cigarette. And man, oh man,
those kind of characters, man. It's like that. That's everything's too sanitized.
If he didn't do that, he would drop dead immediately.
That's the crazy thing is it balanced it all out. Like he always had somewhere to go and he was doing something, but like that, you just couldn't have a guy who openly says he was boozing and smoking cigars and calling games from the bleachers. We need to get back to that. Come on now. That's Harry Carey for you.